Joining us at the table now, I'm going to have her throw on a headset. Way Mike Schlereth says hello and hugs to everybody.
Is this the part where you wake me up at 7
No, this is fantastic. Leslie Visser joining us here at the table. How you doing?
Hi, Bill.
It is fantastic to see you.
I haven't seen you since the Wounded Warrior day. But remember, you used to call me in the hotel room. And you'd say, you're on with Bill. I'd be like, huh?
There you go. Oh, every now and then. And then Mark's joining us as well, sitting down at the table now.
Bill,
Mark Schlereth.
Bill would call me in the Radisson. What was the
hotel? The Radisson Hotel
right
in
across,
Green Bay,
yeah.
Right across the street from the airport. Now, when you were a player, you had to go down to Appleton.
Yes.
Right. You used to go down to Appleton, Wisconsin.
Oh, I have. May I interrupt first? I have the greatest story in the history of aviation. I don't know if I told you this.
No, go ahead.
But on Monday Night Football, we used to get to fly privately. And, you know, I mean, I love him. He's one of my best friends. But Al Michaels is a diva. He wouldn't even deny it. He's a diva. So we would go down to talk to whoever, you and Appleton. And so the Monday night plane, what is it, a 45-minute drive from Appleton to Green Bay?
About 35, 45 minutes, depending on traffic. Yeah.
Al would insist that we take the private plane from Appleton to Green Bay.
Right.
So in the history of aviation, you never heard this. The gentleman driver who dropped us off at the plane, goodbye, have a great flight, picked us up in Green Bay.
I can see that.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah, right.
But
yeah.
He insisted, no, we're not driving, we're taking the plane.
So, well, you know, obviously, both in broadcasting now, you covered the NFL, you played in the NFL. So, let me ask you first, Mark, how you been? How you been doing?
I'm good.
How is your sauce selling?
My sauce is good, man.
I thought you were off the sauce.
Yeah, no, I'm at you like it. I always tell people, like coaches, always say, "Oh, you look good. You've been lifting. Yeah, I've been working out and stuff." I can't. If you hit me, I'd break like a piece of peanut brittle, and I can't pass a drug test. But beyond that, I am ready to make a comeback in the NFL. Things are good, and the business is great. You know, the business is it's interesting. You know, it's an interesting endeavor. I've got a gourmet line of green chili, and now quesos, and starting hot sauces, and it's been a fascinating. It's kind of been a fascinating deal. And I've been extended grace so many times. And honestly, the reason is, and I was telling Leslie this earlier, but I have always believed that my success, whether it was in football or whether it was in broadcasting and now in the business world, has been because I've always been in relationship with people. And you're either in relationship in business, you're either in the relationship business or you're going out of business. And the broadcasting thing is the same deal. And so I have just been able to develop relationships with people in the business world that have basically, like I said, extended me grace when we can't meet a production order or something happens that we just weren't expecting. You know, you jump into things like this and you don't know. I mean, I didn't know anything about the grocery business. I know more about the grocery business than I care to know right now.
Did they have much hot sauce in Anchorage?
No, probably not. But it's been a fun endeavor. It's just me and a buddy of mine. We're a two-man company, and we have muddled through. It has been a blast, and you know, it's eventually it's going to pay off.
Yeah, I want to talk just a little football because you've been to a Super Bowl numerous times. You've covered them, so I'll start with you, Mark. This week, what is it like?
I loved it. I loved being a part of this. You don't see what we're in here, right? As a player, you're so sequestered and you're so focused on your game plan and what you have to do. I used to tell my wife and my kids, it was like, listen, I'll have dinner with you guys on Thursday and Friday night, okay? That's the extent of my family obligations because I am here to do nothing but win a game. And after Sunday and after we win this game, we're going to have a blast. You know, we'll go on vacation, we'll do whatever. But just understand, and my wife was awesome. She handled tickets, she handled all the minutiae, the family, all that stuff. She was awesome. There was a great partnership there. But I was really big into this is a business trip, and you didn't see all this. The first Super Bowl I ever covered, Leslie, was the New England versus the Rams in New Orleans.
17 years ago.
And I was shocked as a member of the media. When I walked into I didn't realize all this. Like, I'm in Radio Row right now, and you look, there's TV stations. There's a million different people in here right now.
Right.
I had no idea all this stuff was going on because I never really left the hotel or left the practice facility. So it was just crazy.
Now, well, Leslie, as somebody who worked for CBS, now you had, when you covered Super Bowls, when you were the station, you had a little bit different access, but not much. You were kind of fending for yourself like a lot of us were.
Oh, it's this is my 35th Super Bowl, and I tell people that when I started, Radio Row was a row.
Right. That's what we were just talking about. Yeah.
Four people. But it was
Randy Cross was just here, and he said the exact same thing.
See, isn't he the best? Remember when Randy did that ad the, when it was Taste Great?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And no one recognized him, but then when he bent over to snap the ball.
Yeah, right, right, right.
That's when they knew who he was. But, no, it's we've just seen it grown. I mean, Mark and I were just on in Australia. We were on in London, which, by the way, do you know Mark's son just signed with the Red Sox? We're so excited.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. And I followed his career because I follow you on Twitter.
Right.
And we follow each other on Twitter, but I followed you and your updates. So.
Right, yeah,
well,
yeah.
They're playing. You know, I'm born and bred to the Red Sox. They're playing in London this summer, so I'm going, and hopefully
awesome.
Daniel.
hopefully he makes his trek back. It's been a long kind of six-year journey here. From the big leagues through the minors and injuries and you know, what do they always say in sports in general? Like, the greatest ability is availability.
Yep.
And he's had a problem with availability. That's been his big issue. But he's really throwing the ball well. He threw the ball great last year. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
You know, when you won – oh, actually, he was talking about the win over the Packers.
Yep.
That
Sorry, Bill.
Sorry, Dolly. But he was talking.
You didn't beat my ass. Right. I mean, yeah. I felt bad about it. But
I asked him, what was your vantage point on the Elway helicopter? And tell him what you told me.
Yeah.
He thinks he should be the MVP.
Well, yeah, because it was a 17-17 ball game. We drive down the football field, third down and six from 12-yard line. Elway comes in, calls a play, drops back to pass, scrambles to the right, takes off, bam, gets hit by three Packers, does a little whirly bird thing, you know, first down, the ref signal, we go drag him up, and that's when I flushed with pride. I was like, gosh, if I don't miss my block, he's never forced out of the pocket.
But
he was having a horrible game. He probably throws an incomplete pass.
That's
we
right.
kick a field goal, we lose by four. So I was like, you're welcome, Colorado.
Yeah.
I won the Super Bowl. Sorry about that, Green Bay.
Yeah, and Elway never mentions it.
Yeah.
Can you believe
in
all beat the post game?
Who beat you?
No, I just made that up.
Okay.
I dispensed justice.
Was it the Gravedigger?
No, Santana Dotson was the guy.
As long as it wasn't Reggie.
Was that one of the strongest fronts you'd seen in your playing career?
Yeah, you know, honestly, one of the things that happened was we went to Green Bay in 1996. We were the number one seed. We finished that season 13-3. We went to Green Bay in December, and I'll never forget about walking out of the tunnel. Back then, you walked down this set of stairs from the locker room. And there was, you got outside, but they had like a little plywood tunnel you'd walk through. And you get down to the bottom of that thing, and you'd be like, oh, it's not that bad. And then you'd walk out into the open air, and it was like somebody punched you in the face. And you're like, oosh. So we go to play that game. Elway was out with an injury. We started Bill Musgrave. TD was out with an injury. Gary Zimmerman had shoulder surgery.
Wow.
I played, but I had knee surgery the week before. I still played. Because we just didn't have enough people. And we had like three or four defensive players that missed the game. So we were already locked. So we sat everybody. They whipped our ass. It was like 45-7 or something.
Wow.
I mean, we just got crushed. And I think that played a huge role in us beating them in the Super Bowl, because that's what they thought we were. They had that perspective from that game where they just trucked us. And we knew that's not who we are. We run the ball against everybody. And, yeah, that game was different, but we just didn't have our guys. And it was a phenomenal, like, the difference. They just weren't ready. The other thing that really irked us about that game is you guys had a backup rotational defensive lineman that you didn't dress. And it was coming out of the winter climate in San Diego with big giant Gilbert Brown and some of the other guys, like, that was a sign for us of disrespect. You guys don't know how much we're going to put it on you
right.
running the ball, and you're going to need this rotation. And so for us, when the inactives came out, it pissed us off. You think you can get by without having a rotation on the defensive line?
Yeah.
You're sorely mistaken. And that was that. And all these things, you know, we talk about this championship, this Super Bowl right now with Tom Brady, and does he feel disrespected and we're still here and all that stuff. That stuff is real.
Yeah.
Like in a player's mind, you grasp onto that stuff, you hold on to that, it becomes real, and it does become a motivating factor.
Like, do you think, how do you pronounce his name, Mikkel Roby, the defensive, do you think he should just be quiet?
Not say that? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because anytime you do that, anytime you take on Brady like that or you do those things, it's not just you. It's the other 10 guys on the defense that have, like, you write checks that everybody else has to catch. Shannon, I still work with Shannon Sharpe to this day. I love Shannon. Shannon's my dear friend. I hated playing with him at times because Shannon always seemed to be able to pick a fight against the guy I was playing against. I'd like, hey, listen, some, you know?
Yeah.
I'd be like, I remember getting in an argument with a defensive lineman, Chester McLaughlin. And Chester McLaughlin is just huge, right? And he's all pissed off at me. And I'm like, listen, your beef is not with me. It's with 84.
Correct.
And I go, and if you want to go thunder punch him on top of the head, I'm not coming to his defense. You can go crush him. I don't care. Like, but don't take it out on me. Take it out on him. Like, you want to fight with him, go fight with him. Because, you know, Shannon just would never shut up.
So do you think the whole Ram defense did not want him to say that?
Oh, yeah. Nobody wants it. You know, they'll deal with it, but nobody needs it.
Before I let you go, I got to ask you, Leroy Butler was up to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You played against him, obviously, in the Super Bowl. You covered him for many years. I'll never forget, we were in New York. Ronnie Lott comes up behind him and says to me, looking at him, this is a guy that belongs. We've got gold jackets, and this guy should be there.
Yeah.
Do you think he should be there?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. When you look at that position, though, and the position has changed so much.
Right.
Right? That position where he was, especially in that season, he was phenomenal, man. That guy made more tackles than anybody. And our whole game plan, the reason we beat the Green Bay Packers that year was our whole game plan centered around him, stopping him. So we actually exchanged on the backside of all running plays. We exchanged the responsibility between Williams, the outside linebacker, and Leroy Butler. So Leroy, we actually designated as in the running game, we designated him as the weak side linebacker and flipped responsibilities.
Ah.
So he didn't make tackles on us. So our whole game plan was centered around stopping him.
That's how good he was.
He was a great player. The issue that you get into, as you well know, the issue that you get into is look at the safeties that are out there right now.
Right.
You still, John Lynch isn't in right now. Steve Atwater right over there.
Right.
He's sitting right over there. He's one of the great that's ever played. He's not in. This year, Ed Reed. This is his first year eligibility.
Oh, okay.
So you know he's going in. So there's such a log jam of guys, and now it's changed from every guy's got to be a cover guy, not just a run support guy. So the perspective or the position has changed in the last 10 years, and we tend to forget those guys who were the enforcers and how good they were at what they did because the game has changed.
But
we don't look at them the same
anymore.
Remember
your own team. By the way, I covered him so long, he was Leroy Butler when I started.
Right, yes.
But remember, like, it took Art Monk forever because here comes
Terrell
Owens.
Yeah, here comes another wave
so
of guys.
So that's where I think Leroy's stuck in, that it's a new wave and you kind of get – and, you know, I hope he doesn't have to wait till it's the veterans because he was a beast.
Yeah, no doubt.
Didn't he invent the Lambeau Leap?
He did.
He did.
He was pointing into the stands, said, catch me, here I come. And
he should be in just for that.
Yes.
Hey, before, are you guys here for, you guys got anything going on?
It's an interesting company.
I wanted to make sure we got that on.
Oh, thank you.
We could talk for hours.
I know, we could. It's an interesting company. It's called Altitude International, and the premise behind it is, why are athletes in Denver have an edge when they play? Why do the Kenyans win the marathon? Because they play at mile high, runners 7,000 feet high. So this chamber, it's nothing immoral, nothing illegal. It's a chamber, like a big glass, part of your gym. And it is a compressor, takes 5% of the oxygen out, and your body builds up the red blood cells, which Mark can tell you, it was such an advantage to play in Denver.
Yeah. It obviously, your body goes through physiological changes when you train at altitude, and this is a way to train at altitude, even at sea level, and create more red blood cells. Your body creates more red blood cells, which carry the oxygen, so that when you do compete at sea level, and I used to go down to the Seahawks or go down to the Chargers at sea level and play, and you felt you could play six quarters of football.
Maybe that's why you won the Super Bowl.
Well, that's exactly why.
That's what it is.
There you go. So it's a way to build those red blood cells so you have a competitive advantage at sea level.
It is great to talk to both of you.
Yeah,
Leslie,
Bill,
I always love seeing you.
We
every time you get a chance
to
come by. Mark, it's always a pleasure myself.
Likewise,
to say
Bill.
Hello as well.
Good to see you, man.
Thanks for coming by.
Exactly.
There you go.
Bye,
Leslie Visser, Mark Schlereth joining us here on the show on Radio Row.